It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reginald Atitula.
Noontime, baby, on a football Friday ahead of the final preseason game. It'll be Texans-Rams. Don't anticipate seeing a lot of starters. Don't anticipate seeing very many starters at all.
No.
After the joint practice between those two teams yesterday. But still some important things that I think we can see, a few of them at least, when we talk about maybe how the wide receivers shake out, how the running backs shake out. That's that. That's forward.
We mentioned that.
Yeah, we did mention that. And we might even mention that a little bit more as we have this conversation. But 713-572-4610, where did the Texans make the biggest improvement during this camp? Because technically, camp is over, right? There's still
this, it's over. No,
this final preseason game.
Yeah.
And we'll, you know, we'll get down camp the 53-man cut here the start of next week. But camp itself, practices, that type of things, we're done there. And so, and a little bit of a, you know, revisiting of what was done, what was improved, what was the goals, and what was achieved during the course of camp. Let us know what you think, or where you thought the Texans made the biggest improvements during camp. And John, you had some things that kind of came to mind for you.
I did, because I'm looking at, you know, I actually was speaking yesterday with somebody over in that building, kind of just getting a feel for things as camp is winding up. And and I just, it just kind of occurred to me like a light bulb moment, and that's why I wanted to talk about it here today. It's amazing that we got legitimate answers, at least to this point. I mean, who knows how the regular season plays out. We got legitimate answers in three areas that I don't think we could have predicted we would have known before the first regular season game, even, that we'd have an answer on that. And let's start with the most important one, because I know I was wringing my hands about this offensive line. You know, I was like, ooh, you know, let's see about Tunsil.
Yeah.
Oh, Kenyon, how's he going to come? Remember that, Figgy? We didn't even know what he was going to look like, you know, coming back. You know, Juice Scruggs. Well, I mean, you guys know I like Juice Scruggs a lot, but that doesn't mean squat,
right?
You know, compared to what they think of him. So we didn't know about the offensive line at all, like at all going into camp. It was all speculation. It was all, let's see. Dude, we got an answer. Like, I know we can parse a little bit, and I think Seth Payne brought up a really good point. Like, maybe the offensive line isn't run blocking quite as well as we would like to at this point, but what's that analogy he uses? Five fingers in a glove?
Yeah.
You know, that they haven't done that enough. I always say they haven't played in tandem enough. To really get that going. But we've got an answer on the offensive line. We've got five dudes that are in the places where they were expected to be playing and playing pretty darn well. We haven't criticized, you know, legitimately anyway, maybe a false start or something here and there. Tunsil, Green, Scruggs, obviously Shaq Mason.
Well, Tunsil, that's because he hadn't played.
Yeah,
very much. Exactly. Yeah, let's be fully transparent on that.
We haven't said, oh boy, I don't know about that guy. Like, the offensive line is set.
Yeah, you know what the line is going to be.
Yeah.
What's the level of aptitude that they're capable of reaching, I think, is something that you still want to see. And I don't know, how much concern, let me ask you like this, how much concern do you have with the offensive line pass blocking? Because run blocking is something that both Clint Sterner and Seth Payne, guys who I would defer to in some ways on this, have said, hey, man, there's still something to be desired when it comes there. And I think that they're absolutely correct in that. I mean, I mentioned how with those guys talking about it, I went and watched the All-22 from Saturday's game against the Giants.
And
I
was like,
hey, man, what's happening here, man? Y'all don't have a hat on a hat in these instances. That's kind of what you're trying to do running the football. And I'm not just talking about, you know, an unblocked player on the backside or something like that. Where you're going to the football, having an unblocked player is not what you want. So, like, there are some things there, but that some of that is schematic and those types of things.
Yeah.
Pass blocking wise, though, you feel comfortable, though, right?
Yeah, I think pass blocking, you're absolutely comfortable. And even run blocking, as I just mentioned, I think, you know, you can see them getting there from here. So, like, I fully expected to be worried. I'll put it this way. I fully expected to be worried about this offensive line going into the regular season. And I'm not really worried. Are you? Are you worried about this offensive line?
I'm not. The only question I had was Kenyon Green, how he was going to look. And he's been fine. And then also Titus Howard. And this is not, you know, if he would play good or not. It's more of if he could stay healthy.
Yeah.
But outside of that, and that's, to me, that's slim pickings.
Yeah. So when you talk about where they made the biggest improvement, that's where I'm starting.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where I'm starting for sure. Also.
Okay.
I mean, we were talking about Jeff Okudah, CJ Henderson. Like, who, you know, yeah, they drafted this rookie, but boy, he runs a 4.6.
Yeah,
you know?
who's going to grab that opposite spot from Stingman?
We kind of say, Lazar, they're going to play in the slot.
He's going to start him off in draft the slot. Night, we talked about that.
He'd be a slot guy.
Yeah, he'll be, maybe he could be a slot guy.
Yeah.
So talk about the biggest improvement. Number two, we know our cornerbacks, and I don't. Are you worried? I'm not worried.
I feel kind of confident about he plays in kind of a heady way. Now, of course, he's still a rookie. You will see rookie stuff pop up during the course of a season. But he plays in a heady way when you talk about, again, the technique and the ways that you can make up for maybe being a half step slower than other folks by making sure you're on your P's and Q's. And more often than not, it does look like he's on his P's and Q's. Hell, we were getting reports from camp.
He was on Cooper
yesterday.
Cup.
On Cooper Kupp, one of the best technicians running the
like a cheap suit
running routes, and he was going, you know, kind of you know, play for play with them and making sure to stick with them and making it tough on one of the better wide receivers in this league, right? Yeah. If that's not a ringing endorsement of his capability, at least being on the field, right? Mm-hmm. You don't even have to get into like the aptitude of how good he is as a second cornerback, right? But at least being on the field and being comfortable and looking like he belongs to the point where you do not have him being labeled the mark by the other team, which that means something when you're going to be playing across from a Derek Stingley Jr. who looks like he is ascending in his place as a cornerback.
Yeah.
And if you have an ascendant cornerback and another cornerback on the other side, the people go, oh, well, yeah, that's fine. Yeah. We could go against him.
Good.
Then you're going to end up seeing a lot of traffic that way. He's probably still going to see a lot of traffic that way because of that
only
dynamic.
Because of Stingley.
But he looks like he's going to be capable of being up to the challenge, at least in the minimum.
By all rights, we should be sitting here. You know, this conversation we're having about, oh, who are they going to keep as the backup wide receivers? We should, by all rights, be having that conversation. Who's going to be the starting cornerback opposite Stingley? You know, we should have had that competition, like that's a little unsure about, is it going to be Okudah? Is it going to be Henderson? Is it going to be Les? And we're not. Back to the question you asked here, where have they made the biggest improvement? They got themselves two cornerbacks. They got them.
If you want to go start talking about cornerback depth,
no, you're
fair enough, right? Like we can have those questions, but shout out to Kamari Lassiter, you know, pretty definitively answering that cornerback question for this team over the course of camp. Is there anyone else that comes to mind? Figgy, is anything coming to mind for you?
I was kind of on that same page of Lassiter, but Kalen Bullitt, man, like I had questions about the safety position because I know what Jalen Petrie is going to do this year. Mm-hmm. He had a bad year last year, had a good rookie year. So I'm thinking like, man, there's no way they're going to start two rookies, let alone one rookie. And look, it looked like they finding a way to start this second rookie.
And look, we had how much time going with the scandal of Justin Simmons being out will they sign him and those types of things?
It kind
of
got to a point where I'm like, who needs Justin Simmons at this point?
Exactly.
We got Kalen.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bullet,
yeah. Right, and I think that means a lot for the way that he's played and the confidence that he is seeming to give us. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say that he will be Justin Simmons, and that, like, if you had signed Justin Simmons, that you would not get better output.
Yeah,
but then at that point, I think the question becomes: would signing Justin Simmons have been like a development stopper or what have you? Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's a whole nother thing. But at least, again, in
the same way
we were talking about with Kamari Lassiter, right?
Yeah,
like, being able to be capable of being a starter, even if he's not like the best starter mm-hmm. in the league or anything, but being capable, that means a lot for a rookie to step in and field to that level of play, especially considering this is a team with high expectations.
I mean, you could argue that we came into training camp, Figgy, not knowing who would be safety, like any safeties.
Yeah, I kind of penciled. I had Jalen Petrie up there in pencil, but still, I wasn't confident about that, especially from last year.
Ward, we wondered about Jimmy Ward. He's getting up there a little bit, you know, who knows, and all this other stuff.
Now he got an extra year. You got Jalen Petrie playing the nickel.
And Kalen Bullock starting.
Yeah.
So that's a great point. So that's three big places right there. Where we should be having a discussion.
Those are major questions.
Yeah, where we should still be talking, man. Who's going to be at safety? Who's going to be at cornerback? Do you know anything about the offensive line?
Or even just questioning starting a rookie at safety like that.
Yeah, yeah.
With Laremy Tunsil, though, because we got a text on the text line, from the 979, Tunsil scares me most. Over, under, 8 false starts. He's coming out. He's coming in out of shape. He's going to jump in. And he has to overcome the fact that he is not yet ready. Like, he's in shape, but he's not in game shape.
Do the false starts, though, bother you really that much?
Well, yes.
Penalties are always going to be a problem.
False starts bother me, but that's life with Laremy Tunsil. I mean,
that's where I'm at with Laremy Tunsil.
I see what you mean.
Like, that's Laremy right there. He don't do nothing. Once he start giving up, you know, blocks and... Yeah. CJ started getting hit. That's when I start having the issue.
Like I said, I don't like it, but that's just life with Laremy. And let me just say this. I know a lot of people aren't out there every day, and we're privileged to be able to go out there. He came in great shape.
Like, Tunsil?
Yeah. Now, maybe not the, quote, football shape.
Right.
And he talked about that. Tunsil talked about the football shape. But.
In fact, you want to hit that cut? This is actually Tunsil cut 7. Let me know. If you have it there, Fig. But yeah, the idea of like feeling him in his game, being ready to go, Tunsil was talking about.
I feel like I'm getting better every year, man. I'm solid. I'm in a good spot right now, mentally and physically. And some things I was going to prove on, of course. Just revving me back up. I should be ready week one for the Colts.
Should be ready for week one. He was quick in all his answers.
He really
I love cutting up some Laremy Tunsil.
Do not take long.
I think his longest answer was 12 seconds.
God bless.
But let me just tell you, people. He came in shape.
Okay.
Like, he was in shape. That dude is a rock. I mean, he's a big rock, but he's a rock. There's no question about that. Yeah, but the football stuff, he's kind of like Verlander. He knows what it takes to ramp himself up, you know, to be ready on opening day.
Well, he supposedly got a test. We were talking about those ESPN rankings of position groups.
Mm-hmm.
Colts defensive line is one of those ones that's going to be tough. So he's got a little bit of a challenge that way because – you got to be ramped up to the level of facing one of the best, if not the best, defensive lines that you're going to see all season. So you got to be ready to go, and hopefully he is. Some other folks mentioning on the text line from the 832, one of the biggest improvements is depth all the way around. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Outside of linebacker. Linebacker is to be determined.
100%. And it doesn't help that one of the few guys that you're sold on still dealing with an injury to the point of we're not certain, is he going to start the year playing with the team?
And really... This ties in with the first question here is where have they shown the most improvement? I would have bet money that we'd be talking about how thin they were at defensive tackle, and we're not.
Sure.
I mean, they've come up with some answers at defensive tackle. Obviously, Fatakusi and Fatakasi.
Yeah.
And Autry's going to be there eventually, but Mario Edwards came out of nowhere. He came out of nowhere and
he's
like
been flat out good.
Rio.
I remember when they signed him. I was just like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like just a guy.
Yeah.
But no, he's the guy.
Yeah,
he's one of the guys.
The guys.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, I'd say, like, they not only they answered some, they made some significant improvement and then some during camp, and a lot of these places I didn't expect it.
Yeah, and so look, that's what you would hope to have in camp, is you want to figure some answers out and answer them in the affirmative, and it feels like there's a lot of places where they had. Don't want to be all sunshine and rainbows. There's definitely some places that still that still need to show improve, but by and large, there's good reasons for a lot of optimism, and it's good to see that you've had a successful camp. I think you would term it as that, right? A successful camp?
Oh, big time. Now, I think you can kind of fall in between the, boy, did they answer those questions, and we still have questions at linebacker, is depth at running back. That's still something, and that ties in with what we mentioned at the very top of the show.
Like,
what do we have to see to kind of, was the question tomorrow. I think Cam Akers has answered that question, and I think, me personally, I think he's the second back behind Joe Mixon, but we'll see.
I'd have to agree.
But he still has, he's got some questions about his health.
Sure.
That has been repeated over the years, you know, so.
Yeah, and just how effective will it be? He looks like he has the vision and the headiness to be able to play the running back position.
Mm-hmm.
But again, as you mentioned very astutely multiple times, he wasn't running with them ones, right? And so what does it look like when he's running with the ones against ones in this league, picking up some of those carries? Is that maybe explosion that sometimes gets stolen from you in Achilles injuries? Is that going to be there in enough of spades to be able to get effective runs? Or is Joe Mixon going to be the one guy that you look at and you go, that guy is the one that can really make things happen, especially if the offensive line isn't blocking at the highest level that sometimes we might be concerned about?
No, I think you're absolutely right. And I think the Texans really, if they were being honest with themselves, I don't know if they expected Cam Akers. They were just kicking the tires.
It was a flyer.
Man.
A dude who is, in this outside zone scheme has found success in the past.
Yeah.
You get him for the low because of the injuries, and you see if you can throw something at the wall, and it definitely did stick.
Yeah,
in this
sometimes
way.
You kick the tires, and you're like, damn.
Yeah, still runs.
Hey,
yeah,
but we're still good.
We can make this one go A to B.
Yeah,
so there you go. Some of the things that the improvements that we've seen from the Texans during this camp, as it wrapped up yesterday with a joint practice against the Rams. They'll finish out the preseason tomorrow with a preseason game against the Rams. That's 12 p.m. or 12 noon. I always forget. Yeah, that's p.m. A.m. would be midnight, but 12 p.m. is when the game kicks off. 9 a.m. is when you get to hear pregame.
Yes, sir.
With Seth and Sean right here on Sports Radio 610, your home of Houston Texans football. Coming up next, let's do a little bit of lunchtime confessions.
Sometimes it's sports, sometimes it's not. Whatever it is, Reginald and John are keeping it real. It's In the Loop's Lunchtime Confessions, brought to you by Sagamore Spirit Rye Whiskey.
Watch this.
All right, let's get to these confessions here. And I'm going to start with one that we were going to talk about during what was popping, because it was also a confession. So you saw, and you may want to lay it out a little better than I would. So Colorado staffer reportedly went a little rogue and was seeking Saudi money for NIL.
Yeah, so he was a staffer, no longer a staffer, and he penned a letter with a little bit of, I guess, ire towards the team or the program, rather.
Yeah.
That he felt like he had leveraged some of his, connections to try and pump up the NIL fund, and he just didn't agree with the way that they were handling it or whatever. And one of those things that he said is he'd even went to Saudi Arabia to try and get that Saudi money in the NIL fund.
Yeah.
And you hear that Saudi money being invested
and
in football.
And it's like, oh my God, the Saudis?
And that catches people's attention.
Here's my confession.
Okay.
Really wouldn't have a problem with that. I really wouldn't. And let me explain.
Let
me explain it.
Well, especially after yesterday, you was out here talking about the Russian national anthem. Yeah, we watched you closely, buddy.
I bet commie?
The FBI got our wireless tapped. Actually, the Wi-Fi was down, wasn't it?
Wi-Fi went down.
The feds are on us, man.
I need to put tape over this camera.
The feds are on us, buddy.
Let me feed Lopez some cheese.
Yeah, man.
You rat.
Let me explain it, and I think you guys are going to agree. Maybe not these two guys in this room, but the royal you, as they say. So I get, obviously, we all know Saudi Arabia is got some their hands in some dirty stuff.
Yeah, man.
They've done some heinous stuff, some people over there. But you have to realize Saudi money is literally everywhere around us.
It is.
Saudi money, what do they call those consortiums of money that they invest in different companies and stuff, whatever. They are in $35 billion. $35 billion has been invested in, I don't know, little outlets like Amazon, Walmart, and Uber. So, like, if you're gonna, you know, complain about that, and they are, you know, they, if you buy anything on Amazon, the Saudis have invested in that. If you buy anything at Walmart, the Saudis have money in that. If you've ever taken an Uber, the Saudis have money in that. So I'm not necessarily agreeing with what they have done in a general sense. What I'm saying is that money is already around us. I got no problem with a little Saudi NIL money.
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
The point is well taken. My problem, actually, funny enough with this.
Public investment fund.
Yeah, the public investment fund, the PIF. Yeah. More than, in this particular instance, more than the actual Saudi aspect of it, mm-hmm. is actually the investment in college football of it that kind of...
Oh, the ethical kind of...
Not even the ethical... Well, yeah, in some ways, but I'm like, it doesn't make sense to me, right? Because if you are going to do venture capitalism or what have you, mm-hmm. investment in college football, what's the end goal, right? Because when you are trying to invest, like, with one of these companies with these money, right, all this money that they're trying to invest in a company, the idea typically is, right, that private equity, mm-hmm. they buy into it, they you know, put some money up front, and hopefully at some point that money is...
Yeah, I don't know what their end game would
be. They're trying to make more money, generate more money, whether it's stripping the company for parts and selling it off, and, you know, they want to make money out of this. They're not doing this out of the goodness of their heart to give money away. College football is not it's not an efficient sport for money, and it's usually just a money pit, and what you're getting out of it, mostly these bag men of old and things like that, and now boosters, they get access, they get pride, they get, like, those are the things that you're getting out of it. How are you going to turn money, or how are you going to turn money put in into more money for the whoever is the investors?
First of all, he didn't get it,
and I imagine that's part of it.
That's part of it. But what my point is,
the moral aspect.
If they want to invest. You know, don't stand on this moral high ground when you're buying stuff every day on Amazon, Walmart, and Uber.
Now, the moral high ground that you then get to is, ain't that a state institution? Right? Like,
yeah, but it's a state institution for the NIL already, that all these companies that are investing.
Sure, but then you know? Now you got it. Now you got a foreign state investing in an American state
That's
institution.
That's their problem.
I'm getting some interesting places. Watch this. These are my confessions. I am so happy with how much the Houston area has, you know, welcomed me and wrapped me back in, especially on this show. Mm-hmm. But I've got to be completely honest. I got to confess.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little uncomfortable so much, Reginald. Like, I truly, I love my name. I enjoy it. But I'm very used to everybody just defaulting to Reggie. And I was like, all right, it's cool.
So, are we killing Reginald?
I'm not trying to.
Hold on, this is big.
But what I am saying is, I did not realize that it would hit my ears in this way with so many people calling me Reginald as opposed to like Reggie. Maybe I've just gotten used to people using the more comfortable.
R.I.P. Reginald.
Look, you can still call me Reginald. It is indeed my name.
No, I don't.
It. You don't want to?
I don't want to.
Okay.
I prefer Reggie.
I ain't gonna lie. It's a little funny for me calling somebody Reginald because I know a whole bunch of people named Reginald.
Yeah.
But they never go by Reginald. They always. I have a cousin named Reggie.
Yeah.
So
I never even heard his name called Reginald before.
All right. Reggie. I totally respect Reginald, and I told you the story. The reason I put P in my bylines, John P. Lopez,
because mama called you John P. Lopez.
My mom called me out on it on the first story I ever sent.
I'm gonna call you John P. Lopez
when I was a freshman at A&M, and so I was used. So I get that respecting. That's the name my mama gave me and wants me to use, but. If we're being honest about here, I'm going to walk right over in the next break to Parker's office and say, change all those intros.
That's funny.
Let's change them. Start clicking on that little laptop of yours over there, and let's make it Reggie, because I'm in on Reggie.
What's a name you don't like people calling you?
Well, out my name, first of all.
Yeah, not like that, but have to do with your name, because me, like, my real name is Edward. I don't mind somebody calling me Edward. I don't like Ed. Like, don't call me Ed. Every time I hear somebody say Ed, I think of the horse, Mr. Ed.
Mm-hmm. Don't call me Ed. I don't know that there's a permutation of my name that it's like, yeah, don't do that. But I guess maybe someone will try and find out.
Man, Reginald didn't last as long as New Coke.
5 days. I am still Reginald. That's fine. But yeah, you can, Reggie works just fine. I guess I didn't realize how used to being called Reggie that I was.
All right. Well, that's it. That changes my mind.
It's dead.
You're Reggie.
That's gone.
You're Reggie.
That's wild.
Watch this. These are my confessions.
Man, I felt so bad for my wife yesterday. So before I left to go to work, she was telling me, like, yeah, you know what? I think I'm going to cook it. I'm going to make some steak and rice and make some sauce. Da, 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 da. I'm like, all right, cool. Go to work. Come home. I had a long day at work, by the way. I got home a little late. But I got through the door. Man, the food was smelling so good. And a little backstory, my wife loved to cook. She'd come up with different recipes. Sometimes she look up recipes to try.
Oh, nice.
So I walk in, it's smelling good. I'm ready. Yeah. I'm about to go right to the, I'm about to stiff arm her and go right to the kitchen.
That's wild.
Now, she was sitting there and she had this like really disgusted face on her. And I'm thinking like, damn, did she hear my confession from last year? I'm thinking like, oh man. So I'm like, sweetie, what's wrong? She's like, this tastes awful. Like, we can't eat this. It tastes bad. So apparently, whatever recipe she read, they had her add like baking soda to it for some reason. Mm-hmm. And so the steak had the baking soda taste to it. And she was just like, man, we're going to have to go somewhere. We
you know what? I've got her back on this.
Yeah. No,
there's no worse feeling.
I felt so bad.
That's terrible. Yeah.
And there is no worse, especially when you have people over.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. My God. You're like, oh, that did not turn out how.
Yeah. She felt so
bad. God bless her. Because that's so bad for her, man.
And this only happened to her twice. Like, she usually not.
That's the worst part. Like, you got it. Now you also have a reputation. You're like, I know I usually come through for you.
Yeah.
Except, I think a few of my friends did like a Friendsgiving. Whatever,
yeah.
A few years back, and I was like, man, I've been wanting to make this like baked mac recipe that I had seen for a long time, and I was like, I was gonna shred the cheese and everything, I was gonna do it up big. I said, all right, bet. I did it. That thing came out the oven. I was like, that's mid as hell. So mediocre. And so everybody's there, and I'm like, look, eat it, don't eat it. You not hurt my feelings. I know. Yeah. But I know.
But see, this was the crazy part. The food looked good yesterday.
Right.
Like, it looked
good. And I smelled it and thought it was
It smelled amazing. But she said it just tastes like
I've been
bacon
there.
Soda.
We've all been there.
Yeah, she did that one time before. She tried to make a red velvet cake. And for some reason, they had her add vinegar to it.
Oh.
Yeah.
So took a bite. It tastes just like you know vinegar, what? Man.
Tell her this story real quick. I had Leonard Botello from Truth Barbecue. Hell, Aaron Franklin said the same thing on the Bite Meat podcast, my barbecue podcast.
Okay.
They both said they've done that 100 times.
Man.
And these are the legends.
It does happen to the best of us.
Legends.
Literally.
Got you. It only got her twice, but man, she felt so bad. We had to go to HEB and get a meal simple.
Those quick meal.
Yeah, man. But I felt so
shout
bad.
Shout out to HEB.
Shout out to HEB.
Watch this. These are my confessions.
All right, I talked about, speaking of cooking, my son loves to cook. He always makes us dinner on Thursdays, and it was outstanding yesterday. But anyway, so we always go play with our granddaughter. That's our Thursday. You know, it's my slower day and all that. So we're eating. I'm playing with my granddaughter. Take her outside. She gets tired. We come inside. What is it about Disney movies that their songs stay in your head forever? Like,
let it go.
Dude.
Let it go.
She put on Frozen.
Anymore.
I drove home singing it. I went to bed singing it. I woke up this morning. That's what gave me the idea for the confession. I woke up this morning. I'm like, let it go. Let it go. What? And it's Disney more than anybody else.
That's right. Look, Disney got money as an organization. You bet money that they're doing research.
Dude, do they put some sort of like data chip in that thing or what is it?
I know
it?
This song was in the streets for a long time too, man. Yeah. They was actually playing this on the radio.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I got tired of this song. I only saw the movie like twice.
It was a good movie.
Oh, it's a great movie.
Yeah.
But I could watch any movie with great music and I won't think about it again once the movie's over. Man, I woke up. I woke up singing Let It Go. Like, what is it about Disney?
So is your granddaughter, is this like her go-to?
No, her go-to is Encanto.
Ah, okay. Encanto is
we don't talk about Bruno.
Oh, you put on Encanto, it's over. Like, this was just like after she got tired and dinner. We watched we only watched like 45 minutes of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm singing that damn song all night and all morning.
What was that movie for you, that go-to as a kid?
As a kid, Dumbo.
Dumbo.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
I was a big Dumbo and Lady and the Tramp Yeah.
The one that came to mind for me, just when you were talking about the songs, mm-hmm. Mulan.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Mm. Be a Man goes hard. And then...
Isn't they coming out with another one now?
Are they?
I think they are.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
And what other one?
What was the other one? Oh, Lion King.
Oh, yeah.
Lion King got some
jams. Lion King was my go-to. And then the other movie, I
wore that tape out.
Yeah. No, the other tape I wore, I was Home Alone too.
That was okay.
That was like my go-to.
No songs to worry about there.
Nah.
You don't have to get that stuck in your head.
Watch this. These are my confessions.
All right. This is kind of a confession, but more of a, almost like a question for you fellas. Am I going to have to get this friend out of my life? Because I had a friend that texted me and was like, basically saying that one of the most overrated team nicknames that's ever been was the Houston Oilers. And I don't know if she just didn't get it, but...
I think she didn't get it. I'm like,
what was it?
That the Houston Oilers was an overrated nickname.
Overrated nickname.
Is she from here?
No. Funny enough, she's from Cleveland.
Yeah.
But she lives here now. And she was like, yeah, okay, we get it. There's oil here. And I'm like, yeah, that's the point.
Yeah.
That's the point.
And like, they're called Oilers.
It's a regional like, specific nickname.
Roughneckers or Oilers or whatever. No, that's... Yeah, get her out of your life.
It's a regionally specific nickname.
She from Cleveland, Texas or Ohio?
Cleveland, Ohio, which kind of makes sense. Like, you look around, what are the regionally specific nicknames that y'all got?
They just got this one, the Guardians, because of the big old Guardian statues on the bridge.
And by the way, if you come from a city whose football name is the Browns...
Yeah, named after a dude named Brown. A white man named Brown is what they're named after.
Yeah, somebody called it right. Yeah.
You got no right.
Yeah, Oilers is cool.
There's a whole bunch of Cavaliers
Oilers
in Cleveland.
Oilers is way cool.
Yeah.
Now, we were having a discussion off air about a certain AAA team.
Oh, yeah, the Space Cowboys? Okay, this is the actual confession. Now, the actual confession is I liked Skeeters
way
better.
I did too.
Me too.
When he said that, I'm like, I'm with you.
Like
Skeeters is better than Space Cowboys.
I think so.
Yeah,
and I get it, right? You get a little bit of synergy with the big league club or whatever. But nah, I thought Skeeters was original. And you know, if you want to be sophomoric, which at times I do, kind of funny. Kind of funny to say Skeeters. Not gonna lie.
I like
and
Skeeters.
So, yeah,
and we are
Skeeters.
All about Skeeters.
We good? There we go.
We good.
A little bit of lunchtime.
I got another confession, real quick.
Go for it, buddy.
Watch this.
I'm so happy he's going to go by Reggie now. That's all. I'm going to Parker's office now.
Hey, can we explain to him why we was like so pressed to calling him Reginald?
Because Parker.
And what's funny is
he said you
he goes by Reginald. I'm like, what?
I think Parker got this misconstrued. Parker was typing up something and I was like, I feel like just the first time, can you at least refer me to Reginald? Because I'm still going to, Reginald is my name.
Yeah.
I was like, at least the first time. And I guess that got misconstrued as I need to be called Reginald, which is not which is not the case. But okay.
All right. He's going to spend all weekend redoing all the.
Yeah. That's crazy. Sorry to all the people that I'm making work more.
Because you have to redo them.
Big voice guy. Sorry about that.
Right?
Apologize that to you.
You have to redo them.
I mean, if John Lopez says, John P. Lopez.
I think it's fine. That's his name. But we should be able to call him Reggie.
Absolutely. 100%. That's what I try to tell you, too.
Yeah.
Call me Reggie if you feel like it. There you go. A little bit of lunchtime confessions here, Sports Radio 610. Coming up next in the loop, who's the most underrated Houston athlete going? 713-572-4610. Text in your answer. We'll talk about it next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reginald Atitula.
You're damn right. Hey,
what?
You're damn right.
Wait, Reggie.
Reginald Atitula. No, I was playing. Appreciate you guys hanging out with us. In the Loop, Sports Radio 610. Also, always get involved on the text line, 713-572-4610, where someone did... From the 832, I was about to express how elitist I thought the name Reginald was. Can you imagine Reginald Jackson? No, you're Reggie, man. But I'm glad you're good with it. Always been good with it. And I appreciate you guys rocking with me in particular, but obviously with the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday we talked about it. I was very interested in this piece, MLB.com, about how Yordan Alvarez seemingly kind of underrated still. Because of just how good he is at making defenders wrong, right? Mm-hmm. Because of how good he is at the plate. And then also how he also does not get made wrong by pitchers, right? He makes sure to have good swings, put barrel to ball, those types of things. But that got me thinking, right? Who is indeed the most underrated athlete, rather, in Houston
current
sports?
Current. Now we might go to but
yeah, we can go all time because yeah. I know some people are also talking about all time. But I kind of interested in like the landscape right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I'm thinking current, and we can expand from there. I think Jordan is absolutely on the list. Like, you know, we at the same time that we say he might be the best hitter in baseball,
he's up there for sure.
Certainly at his best. As much as we're saying that, others don't. Like you know, just like in the postseason, he gets, you know, he's gotten tons of love, tons of accolades, all that. But I don't think, like, people are like Shohei, you know, and, you know, all the, you know, just go down the list, Aaron Judge and all that. And maybe it's the market, but Houston's not a small market.
That's a great point. So I just pulled up the best hitter rankings, and this is BetMGM, right? Just to, I kind of wanted to see if this tracked. They put top 10 lists together, and there is an Astro on here, but it's not Yordan Alvarez.
Right.
Aaron Judge 1, Juan Soto 2. Crazy that the Yankees have two of these. Mm-hmm. Shohei Ohtani, Kyle Tucker.
Oh, wow.
That's interesting that they gave Kyle Tucker that and that love. Mm-hmm. Marcell Ozuna, Mookie Betts, Gunnar Henderson, Bobby Witt Jr., Bryce Harper, Freddie Freeman, all those fantastic hitters. No Yordan.
I'm telling you, man.
And on top of that, right, we had a lot of conversation because there was... yesterday we learned that Alex Bregman is going to have that first base mitt put in his hands. He's going to be playing some first base. I think even possibly today he'll be playing a first base. We talked about the idea of how that's basically to help Jordan play more DH so he's not in left field. But one of the things I was talking about with you was like, hey, man, he's actually been a lot better in left field than maybe sometimes we give him credit for.
And that's part of it. But I think the reason that he doesn't necessarily play as much as he could in left field is really just injury-based. You know, he's had a lot of weird things happen and injuries that have knocked him out, and you don't want to do that with Jordan, which speaks to how underrated he is as a hitter. Like, for him not to be on any top 10 list, and I'm not talking about slash lines and all the OPS and all that. I'm just saying, like, when you think about the best hitters – you know, literally and just, you know, in trusting your eyes, Jordan is at least in that top 10, if not really top 3 or 4. I think you're
right in that regard. So, okay, Jordan, clearly we can throw him up on the list, but are there any other names around Houston sports? And I like that this person is thinking outside the box on the text line from the 832. Not even close. It's Simone Biles. And... fair, touche.
Is she underrated at this point?
No. She is properly rated. It just doesn't happen very often because it's every 4 years. So I get his point. So she's underrated.
Yeah,
like,
because we always talk about the three sports.
Yeah.
So we
the
never
three majors.
Really, yeah, so we never bring her up. But I feel like she's rated.
She's
just
dominated Olympic branding.
I think that maybe you could have possibly said that before Olympics. And you're right. She still dominated Olympics brandings. But what you could have pointed to is the idea that she had not had that many Olympic gold medals because she had the, you know, her first time through the second Olympics that she was supposed to be involved in. You know, she got the twisties. That stuff happened. Mm-hmm. She's dominated like the world championships when it comes to gymnastics. But this is her opportunity to return to the Olympic stage and prove once again how dominant she is. And she did exactly that. So I don't, maybe you could have said that before, but I don't know that you could definitely call her underrated necessarily.
I feel like for the Rockets and the Texans, even you kind of got to go into the weeds to find someone underrated. Because like most of the frontline players, C.J. Stroud, Stephon Diggs, even Tank Dell at this point, probably even Nico Collins at this point.
Ooh, last year before the season, though, Tank Dell was super underrated. Yeah, Nico Collins, super underrated.
So if you go into the weeds, and this is just like nobody even cares outside of the Houston market, you know, someone like Daria Gumbawale, you know, does everything, can play a little running back, backup kicker, won a game as a kicker last year.
Sure did.
But that's in the...
my Nigerian brethren.
Yeah, that's deep in
honestly,
the weeds.
Honestly, I was gonna say this. I feel like Derek Stingley is a little underrated.
That's
man.
A name that came because, up for sure.
Yeah. Because look who he was drafted with. He was drafted with Sauce Gardner, who got all the love for the last couple years. I feel like he's a little underrated and underappreciated.
Yeah.
And similarly to maybe like what we were talking about last year, this might be his year for him. And some of the reason why he may have kind of fallen back underrated is because Derek Stingley out of LSU, a man, right? A man amongst boys, right? a dog, all those things. Yeah. And you got here to Houston, and it didn't translate immediately. And like you said, Sauce Gardner, you saw him immediately come in.
Yeah.
And put his
going
put
to New York too.
Yeah, in a big media market. That's right. Yeah. And so that might adjust in some way. So okay, I think Derek Stingley's a good one to throw up. Alperen Şengün comes up from the 281.
I like him a lot. I really do.
Alpi's in an interesting place, though, because for those that are like in the weeds on basketball, mm-hmm. especially with the Rockets, you can maybe look at the time where he was out this past season and they kept on trucking in some ways, and people were like, well, how much does that matter? But no, he's absolutely like a very good player. Mm-hmm. I know that the baby Jokic kind of thing has kind of stuck to him. He's definitely a if you know, you know type guy.
I think if you look outside of Houston, a lot of NBA media people, they always bring up Şengün mm-hmm. whenever talking about like an underrated player.
Yeah.
Like, hey, it's this guy in Houston, because, you know, Houston wasn't good the past couple years, but they always bring him up as this under the radar guy.
Yeah. What about all time?
All time
in Houston
is interesting. I feel like Ketino Mobley is one of these guys for sure.
You don't like Ketino Mobley?
Oh, not a Ketino fan.
Oh, man.
What you got against the Cat?
He was good. I thought he was overrated.
Really?
Really?
Yes.
Okay, so is there a Rocket particularly in that era where you would have said, like, I know someone on the text line mentioned Steve Francis, but I thought Steve Francis was the front-facing guy to the point where
he was the front-facing guy. And I got along with Cat. I mean, with Ketino Mobley, I was covering the team on a daily basis because I was at the Chronicle. I just thought he did a lot of things that were very average, but because he was streaky, you know, and kind of that cool shooter, I thought he was kind of overrated. That era...
Maybe isn't there not one that
not comes, really one? I'd have to go back a little further. Otis Thorpe was a badass.
Otis Thorpe is a name that came up on the text line. Absolutely,
I
feel like there's a lot of those bigs in the Houston.
He was good and underrated.
Basketball is so funny because, like, historically, guys can get lost to history, even though they were bad men. And you can go to various bigs that came through this place in Houston in particular, because Houston has a great lineage of bigs. And if you asked people, nationally, which that would be a thing to do, right?
Yeah.
they'll give you Yao, they'll give you Hakeem. Are they going to give you Ralph Sampson? Are they going to give you?
Yeah, right, he wasn't here long enough.
Right,
who
are they going to give you when it comes to the bigs? Although there's been a legacy of great bigs in Houston as well, so I do think that
Otis Thorpe was. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, Otis Thorpe is absolutely big, one of those guys.
Now the Texans, I think there's a right answer.
There's a single right answer all time.
I think there is a single right answer. I thought he was all pro caliber, very consistent. And extremely underrated, and that was Owen Daniels.
As a tight end,
he was a great tight end.
He was an every down
tight end, block, you know, catch, clutch, consistent. I would have to look up his numbers, but I thought Owen Daniels was really kind of a heartbeat kind of guy on that offense, but kind of quiet. So that kind of, you know, makes it easier to be underrated if you're not out there a lot.
For sure, absolutely. Do you agree with this one? All-time Lance Berkman? Lance Berkman, one of the killer bees. I feel like
he was properly rated, I think. I mean, he was a notch below Hall of Fame caliber if you look at his numbers.
Yeah, and I think widely how he's regarded.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I don't have a great grasp on how he's regarded, but it does feel like that is how he is regarded. Folks bringing up Kyemi Fairburn. Let's see.
Polarizing, but I think that's fair.
Where he is, where he's rated.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Vonte Leach for the Texans.
Vonte Leach was an absolute. He was integral on that same team, but more as a blocker and a pass receiver. He actually caught the ball a lot.
Yeah.
I'm looking at Owen Daniels right now, dude. Mr. Consistency. Like 63, 70. These catches. 40, 62, 54, two Pro Bowls. You know, 36 touchdowns.
Did what he needed to do.
Dude was, he was nails.
281 brings up Brian Ching. I just feel like, I think he was pretty highly regarded.
He was the face
in MLS.
Of the franchise.
Yeah, he absolutely was there. And then he was highly regarded in MLS in his time.
Yeah.
I think that's another one where it's just kind of maybe lost to history. And then also MLS history is a very particular thing here. You have to, it's really very much a if you know, you know situation. Figgy, is there anyone that came to mind for you when it came to like, oh man, that person doesn't get their due?
I think this person might be rated just right, but one of the people I thought about was Jonathan Joseph.
Oh, yeah, that's a great answer. Like, that's actually a great answer.
I felt like he was good. I felt like people kind of know about him.
But hell, I might change my answer for Owen Daniels.
He was really good, though, man.
He really was.
He was really good.
He was great. And, yeah, no, I think J. Joe and Owen Daniels off those squads.
And then he's kind of in that weird place where if we say putting him in the ring of honor, that might be a little too much.
Yeah.
But, nah, he was really good, though, man.
Yeah.
He was really underappreciated, too.
Some other names that came in, Sam Cassell, Morgan Ansberg, pre-2012 Matt Shaw. We were just talking about Matt Shaw recently,
yeah,
weren't we?
Yeah, yeah.
Very good, right? Like, obviously.
That's a good pick.
It was a wild thing to see where they were like, hey, we're going to go take this backup from this other team and make him our starter. But, boy, were they right in that regard. He was able to, his ability to run this. Dante Robinson?
Dante was, now, he kind of faded, but yeah, while he was here, he was an upper end cornerback in the league. Yeah.
There you go. I'm just, yeah.
So, Octavio Dotel, because he had Billy Wagner and Lidge behind him. Mm-hmm. That's a good one. Yeah.
Funny enough, Brad Lidge also just came up recently for me. Just, I don't know what's happening. Case Keenum at U of H. Okay. All right. Didn't he hold like a whole bunch of in national records? Yeah. He was rated pretty properly.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Fun to go through, I guess memory lane at that point where you're just playing name an athlete. But yeah, most underrated Houston athletes. Fun thing to examine here in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, obviously, training camp now over. You're at that period where you need to get to that 53-man cut down, and sometimes some guys aren't going to be on your team but have value. Who is most likely to be traded off this squad? Because CBS Sports has a thought on a guy that might need to go. We'll talk about that next.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.